Hey everyone, welcome in. We've got a great panel today.
Excited to dig into this one.
Same here. Some really fascinating stuff to unpack.
All right, let's jump right in. First up, we have a story about Google Cloud API keys. Apparently, thousands of them have been exposed, and they're now granting access to sensitive Gemini endpoints.
Whoa, Gemini access? That's not good. So, like, these API keys that were supposed to be for something else are now unlocking Google's AI model? How does that even happen?
Essentially, it's a permissions issue. These API keys were originally intended for things like billing or accessing Google Maps. But when users enable the Gemini API on their Google Cloud project, those existing keys suddenly get access to Gemini as well, without any warning.
So it's like giving everyone in the office a key to the supply closet, and then suddenly that key also opens the CEO's office. You didn't change the key, you just changed what the key could do.
Exactly. That's a great analogy. So anyone who had one of those original keys, maybe they scraped it from a website, now has access to Gemini. What kind of damage can be done?
Potentially a lot. The article mentions accessing uploaded files, cached data, and running up huge bills by making Gemini API calls. One user even reported over $82,000 in unexpected charges.
Ouch. That's more than a slap on the wrist. It's a full-blown financial aneurysm. And the article also says that new API keys default to unrestricted. That sounds like a terrible idea.
It is. It violates the principle of least privilege, which is a fundamental security concept. You should only grant the minimum necessary permissions. The default should be restricted, not wide open.
So why isn't it? Is Google just being lazy here?
It's likely a combination of factors. Ease of use is often prioritized over security, especially during development. Making things just work is easier than setting up proper restrictions. Also, legacy systems and assumptions about how API keys were intended to be used come into play. Historically, API keys were often seen as simple identifiers, not robust authentication mechanisms. But the threat landscape has changed.
Right. It used to be that API keys were just for tracking usage, but now they're basically passwords. So, what's the fix? I mean, should we all just ditch API keys entirely?
Not necessarily ditch them entirely, but definitely be more careful. Google has implemented measures to detect and block leaked keys, which is good. But users need to rotate their keys, especially the older ones, and restrict their permissions. And consider using more secure authentication methods like OAuth 2.0 or service accounts, especially for sensitive resources like Gemini. Those offer more granular control and better security.
OAuth 2.0. That's the login with Google thing, right? So it's like, instead of giving out a key, you're just saying, hey, Google, is this person who they say they are?
Precisely. It's a more secure and controlled way to grant access. And the key point here is the context matters. An API key used for a public map on a website is very different from a key that unlocks access to an AI model. The risk profiles are totally different.
Okay, so the takeaway here is, check your Google Cloud projects, rotate your keys, restrict their permissions, and maybe think about using something better than API keys for sensitive stuff. Got it. Let's move on. Next up, CISA has added a FileZen vulnerability to its known exploited vulnerabilities catalog.
FileZen? Never heard of it. What is it, and why should I care?
FileZen is a file transfer product. You should care because CISA adding it to the KEV catalog means it's actively being exploited in the wild. The vulnerability, CVE-226-25108, is an OS command injection flaw.
OS command injection. That sounds nasty. Basically, someone can inject commands directly into the operating system, right?
Exactly. An attacker who has authenticated access can send a specially crafted HTTP request that executes arbitrary commands on the server. This can lead to complete system compromise.
Okay, that is nasty. So, someone logs in normally, then sends a weird request, and suddenly they own the server? How is this even possible in 2026?
Command injection vulnerabilities have been around for a while, but they still pop up. It often comes down to improper input validation. The application isn't properly sanitizing user input before passing it to the operating system.
It's like leaving a back door open for anyone who knows the secret knock. And the article says it only works if the FileZen antivirus check option is enabled. That's ironic.
It is. It highlights the complexity of security. Enabling a security feature can sometimes introduce new vulnerabilities if not implemented correctly. And that's the thing about patching. It's a race against time. Even with a KEV listing, organizations often take a long time to patch, leaving a window of opportunity for attackers.
So, what's the fix? Upgrade to version 5.0 or 11 or later, right? Anything else?
Yes, definitely upgrade. But Soliton also recommends changing all user passwords, just in case an attacker has already compromised an account. And this highlights the importance of a robust vulnerability management program. Regular scanning, prioritization of vulnerabilities, timely patching, and continuous monitoring.
Good point. It's not just about patching the latest vulnerability. It's about having a system in place to identify and address vulnerabilities proactively. And considering FileZen as a file transfer product, this could impact the supply chain if sensitive data is exfiltrated.
Oh, right, because companies use it to send files to each other. So one vulnerable FileZen installation could compromise multiple organizations. That's a big deal.
Exactly. Okay, so patch FileZen, change your passwords, and review your vulnerability management program. Got it. Let's move on to our final story, a wormable XMRIG campaign using a BYOVD exploit and a time-based logic bomb.
Okay, that sounds like a cyberpunk movie plot. Wormable BYOVD logic bomb. Unpack that for me.
This is a cryptojacking campaign where attackers are using compromised systems to mine cryptocurrency. Wormable means it can spread automatically to other systems. BYOVD stands for Bring Your Own Vulnerable Driver, which is a technique where attackers exploit a legitimate but vulnerable driver to gain higher privileges.
So they're basically using a known security hole in a driver to get admin access, and then they're installing a cryptocurrency miner.
Correct. They're using a driver called WinRing0x64.sys, which has a known privilege escalation vulnerability. This allows them to bypass security controls and boost their mining performance.
Okay, so they're hacking the system but also making it mine crypto faster. That's efficient in a twisted way. And what's the logic bomb part?
The logic bomb is a piece of code that's designed to trigger a malicious action when a specific condition is met. In this case, the malware checks the system time against a predefined date, December 23rd, 2025. Before that date, it installs the miner and tries to spread itself. After that date, it self-destructs.
So it's like a self-expiring virus. Why would they do that?
The researchers speculate that it could be due to the expiration of rented command and control infrastructure, a predicted shift in the cryptocurrency market, or a planned move to a new malware variant. It's basically a way to limit their exposure and potentially avoid detection.
Sneaky. So how does it spread in the first place? Is it just random drive-by downloads?
It starts with social engineering. The attackers are using pirated software bundles as lures, tricking users into downloading malware-laced executables. Then, once it's on a system, it actively tries to spread to other systems via removable media.
So it's a Trojan horse that turns into a worm. Nasty. And the article also mentions that someone used an LLM to create malware related to XMRIG mining. That's a bit scary.
It is. It shows how AI is lowering the barrier to entry for cybercrime. Even someone with limited technical skills can use an LLM to generate malicious code.
So we're facing smarter malware and more people who can write it. Great. What can we do to protect ourselves?
Be very careful about downloading software from untrusted sources. Keep your operating system and software up to date. Use a reputable antivirus program, and be aware of the risks of removable media. Scan any USB drives or external hard drives before connecting them to your computer. Also, cryptojacking can be hard to detect, so keep an eye on CPU usage.
All right, so avoid pirated software, keep your systems updated, and be careful with USB drives. Got it. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Any final thoughts?
Just that security is a constant arms race. The attackers are always innovating, so we need to stay vigilant and adapt our defenses.
Indeed. And remember that security is not just a technical issue, it's also a human issue. Social engineering is still one of the most effective attack vectors.
Well said. Thanks for joining me, both of you, and thanks to our listeners for tuning in. Stay safe out there.